Hello and welcome to Choose a Phi. Today on the show, we have another roundup episode. I have my wonderful new co-host, Ginger, back here, which she was just on the episode 428 about 6 weeks ago. And we had such a fun time and had such great feedback. We decided, let's do this again ASAP. So we have a lot of fun stuff to talk about today, including in-person events. I just got back from the Economy Conference. We're going to be talking about travel rewards and bold moves. And Ginger has something super interesting called the Trans-Theoretical Model of Change, which she told me, trust me, this is interesting. So this is going to be a lot of fun. And as always, we have your feedback, your wins, your questions. So welcome to Choose a Phi. Ginger, so happy to have you back. This should be fun.
Yes, so happy to be back. Should we jump right in?
Ooh, let's do it.
I'm dying to hear more about the Economy Conference because you've mentioned it a couple times really briefly and that you had a really positive experience. And for us, like normal people, what is it? Who would benefit from it? Let's just start there.
Okay. So I love it. Normal people, that's the great thing is this is for every normal person. Everyone would benefit. So I've talked in the past before about a lot of these in-person events and the benefits of them. And I think what we've found with Choose FI generally is what makes this special is these in-person get-togethers. And we've tried with our Choose FI local groups, right, which anybody can find at chooseify.com/local. There are 300 plus of these across the world. This is a worldwide community. And you just get such benefit from finding other people like you. Ginger, I don't know if you've been to any local meetups or any other in-person events, but they just are energizing. You have never found a more eclectic and interesting group of people than when you get together with other five people. I find that on the micro of, we just had a Richmond local meetup last month, just hanging out at a local brewery. And there were maybe 20, 25 of us, give or take. And it was just fantastic. The whole night went by in a flash and it was great. And then you look at these other events, they're Camp Fis. So I think it's campfi.org. And Stephen has a bunch of these across the country throughout the year. And that's like a short weekend with maybe 40, 50, 60 people. And obviously, there are the longer events, the Chautauquas. And my friend Amy now has the Five Freedom Retreats, which is going to be in Bali, which is super cool. And then there's Economy. And I have to say, Ginger, I didn't know what to expect. So we've had Diana on our podcast a number of times, most recently in episode 416. And she created this Economy conference. And, you know, the name in and of itself doesn't suggest this is the biggest Phi get together in the world. Right? Like when you hear Economy, do you have any idea what it is?
No.
Yeah, I didn't either, to be fair.
I didn't even realize it was a Phi thing until this moment.
Okay, well, wonderful. Then we're getting some clarity here, which is great. And, you know, I didn't really internalize that until I got there. And that is what it is. The Economy Conference, this was the third one she's hosted, is the biggest Phi community event in the world. Wow. Period. Hard stop. End of story. There were probably, I don't know the exact number, 400 to 500 people there. And it was at the University of Cincinnati, and it was a whole weekend. It was 2.5 days. And it was just basically how I'm looking at it is like Camp Phi times 7, basically, like in terms of number of people. And it wasn't overwhelming. It was this perfect sweet spot of, man, there are so many new people to meet and to talk to and to just hang out with. And it was a little bit of everything because there were certainly speakers. So there were a couple different sessions of speakers each day. There were some breakout rooms, some like in-depth sessions. I know Sean Mullaney had one, the FI tax guy, Frank Vasquez, who we love from Risk Parity Radio, the Pioneers, you know, et cetera. So there was a lot of the actual learning, if you will, if that was what you're so inclined for. But there was just a lot of downtime. There was a lot of hangout time to just meet new friends and hang out. And I wound up playing some board games and just hanging out. There's, of course, meals and just all of these things. And yeah, I have to say it vastly exceeded my expectations. It was really genuinely great.
So for someone like you who is pretty well in the community, I hear that it was a positive social event. Did you learn anything?
Did I learn anything? That's a great question. Yeah, I certainly enjoyed the speakers. Our friend James Lowery from Rethink the Rat Race, he had a really cool speech. And I think these are going to be public, actually, on the Economy YouTube channel. Don't quote me on that. But if they are, I will link up to them. And I'm pretty sure they are in my 5-weekly newsletter. So for anybody listening, choosevi.com/subscribe. That's where you get on my newsletter. I personally write this thing every week. So that was fantastic in that he gave a lot of like really detailed notes on like how he operates his rental properties and really automates them, not only for his long-term rentals, but for short-term rentals as well. So like that was chock full of information. There was a really funny one that Financial Panther had a speech. He spent his entire 20-minute speech talking about e-bikes, which is like not my thing at all. And I wouldn't have necessarily spent 20 minutes talking about e-bikes, but like there were a lot of people who walked away with that. And like, damn, I'm going to go out and buy an e-bike now. He convinced me.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. Barbara Sloan, who is somebody who I became friends with there, she wrote a book called Tipped Finance. And actually, I'm having her on the podcast literally next week. So from when this publishes, obviously we're recording this. It's hard to figure out exact point in time. But yeah, so this episode's coming out. And then the following week, I'm going to have her on. She gave a great speech on basically how people who are in the service industries, a variety of service industries, can kind of fit into, and maybe that we're leaving them behind in the advice for financial independence and why that doesn't have to be and why this can actually be really a perfect segment of people who can fit into our community. And frankly, like that was a blind spot for me. So she's phenomenal. So yeah, I think I learned a lot. And that's someone like me who's really been involved in this community for so long. And people could walk away learning. So if that was your only benefit, if all you wanted to get out of a weekend like that, I think you'd walk away with some new knowledge. Hmm.
So it sounds like you're saying it's really for people who are at any stage of this journey, like people who have just begun to get interested, people who already know a lot about it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Trying to think about it on the fly here, which is always dangerous.
You didn't know I was going to grill you about this conference.
I had no clue. No, this is great. Yeah, I think anybody could benefit because, yeah, anybody who has been in the community for a while, like there's always a kind of pay it forward type scenario. So you're always chatting with people, people asking questions. Like I think just community members and just meeting people, like there's benefit to that certainly. So yeah, I mean, I think pretty much anybody could benefit. I think, honestly, anybody could benefit from any of these in-person events. They're phenomenal. I've been to now Chautauqua's, Campfy, Economy, and obviously the Choosevi local meetups. And I just find them fun. I find them invigorating.
Okay. We'll end this segment here by you giving the top three adjectives to describe the Economy Conference. You just said fun. So that's one of yours.
Yeah, fun. So this is one of these funny things. Parts of speech are like not my thing. Like I actually have to like, even now, fairly educated person, like I have to like really think like, oh, what's an adjective? What's an adjective? My kids love to make fun of me because I'm a pretty good writer, but I actually struggle with that. So when you said that, my skin started crawling.
Panic.
Ginger, you're killing me. Certainly fun. But yeah, I just found it fascinating to see, and this is not, I'm not giving you your three things, but I found it fascinating to see how many new people there are in the FI community. And I think that was probably my biggest takeaway. You know, you talk into these microphones and you don't know if new people are still finding FI. Obviously, it's been a weird time the last couple of years with the COVID pandemic and such. And on a very personal basis, I left just feeling so overwhelmed in a positive way. Like people were just coming up to me like in droves, just thanking me for doing this podcast, that they've gotten such benefit from it. And like, you know, that's wonderful. And obviously, I'm not going to lie and say that doesn't feel great. It obviously does. But I think the more important thing is this podcast and this community is doing something great and it's doing something important in the world. And I think there was that palpable sense of that, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. And I might have lost it, but I have it back now because I see how this community is still there, is still thriving, is still growing. It just, I mean, Ginger, I've never been as, I've used the word invigorated 5 times now, but I haven't been as invigorated as this in a long time. So I left just a bundle of energy.
Okay. So your words are fun, educational, invigorating.
There we go. I like it. Thank you.
Well, that's a pretty good sell.
Yeah. Not bad. Yeah. So that was good. And I know we talked a lot about travel rewards on our last episode. And obviously, I have an update post my trip. But I think you had something that that you had almost left unsaid from our first time that you thought was really important to jump in on?
Yeah, I just was thinking about how I was talking last time about travel rewards just didn't seem really available to me. I didn't really think about them very much. And I thought I left out this thing about why. And I thought it might be helpful because other people are probably like me. So the reason I had never really looked into it is that I'm not a big spender. And so, you know, I'm not going to be the person who has $10,000 on a credit card every month. So I didn't think I would probably meet the requirements to do a lot of this stuff. And then once I really dove in, I realized that I did, or it was close. And then I looked in a little bit closer and to learn that there are things people do when they're nervous about, oh, I might not be able to make that. And once I read those, I thought, oh, okay, there's a lot of work around here for if it's not in my budget, I can think about, can I do some of my holiday spending ahead of time? Can I buy gift cards? And a lot of that stuff I didn't really end up having to do, but it was a comfort to me knowing there were going to be some strategies. And then, of course, timing it around a big purchase. You know, we got a new roof recently and it was like, oh, wow, that's the time. Let's open a card. So looking at things that people do, even if they're not big spenders, so that they can take advantage of these points. I'm never going to be the person who gets the companion pass. I'm never going to spend 70 grand on a credit card or whatever it requires. But there are a lot of other cards that, hey, if you can do 3,000 in 4 months, you can get some pretty great points.
Yeah. No, I love that. I think that perfectly summarizes travel rewards, how I conceptualize it. And same as you, we don't spend obviously $10,000 a month on our credit cards. And just to dispel the other myth, it's like there is no interest expense being accrued here or incurred. You're clearly, I mean, my broken record thing is you're paying on time and in full every single month, and you're not spending any extra on your cards just to get these bonuses, right? To get quote unquote free travel. So, I mean, it would negate the entire thing if you went out on a spending spree just to get quote unquote free travel points.
Brad has to say this every time because it would be too tragic if someone didn't understand it.
Oh, yeah.
But yes, pay off your credit cards.
Yes, every month. That's just table stakes for doing this. But yeah, like you said, I mean, not only do you not need $10,000 a month, you don't even need close to that. I mean, I think the biggest minimum spending requirement that I know of for like a mainstream card would be $4,000 in the first 3 months. So you're talking $1,300 a month in that case, mm-hmm. right? So you're $1,300 a month on your credit card. I think most people are spending that across just their normal spending, food, groceries, restaurants, any kind of normal life spending. It's going on your credit card. For most people, it's going to be well north of $1,000. So I think most people can hit these spending requirements pretty easily. And again, it's that cumulative amount. So that $4,000 in the first 3 months, for instance, is just, hey, once you've hit that over that roughly 90-day span, okay, then it triggers that bonus. And that's it. So I mean, if you're just doing that sequentially, one after another, I think it's really doable. You know, it's funny, I actually got a quote that was actually completely unrelated, seemingly on the face of it, but I had this on our little list of things to talk about. Our friend Deanna, who's been on the show a number of times here on Choosify, was on one of my new favorite podcasts, which is called Catching Up to Fi. So this is Becky, who has actually been on Choosify before, and Bill, and their friends who started the show basically for people who are, as they say, getting a late start to Fi. And I think it's really maybe the biggest need in the FI community that has now been filled in a long time. So Deanna was on the show and she said, in this case, talking about student loans, you don't have to have your student loans around for the next 30 years like it's a pet. You can get intense and intentional and pay them off. And it was like he, Dave Ramsey, gave me permission to pay them off. I just thought I'd be paying off student loans for the next 30 years, but he gave me the permission to think outside the box. And so that was the part, Ginger, that I really wanted to emphasize is think outside the box and giving permission. And I think that's what a lot of what we're doing here is. We're normalizing these things that it seems like for somebody else, like even you, just in the first 10 minutes here, we've talked about, oh, is economy for somebody else? Like, is this for some special person? Like, is travel rewards for some other, somebody who spends a lot, somebody who's freewheeling, like somebody who could do that? And the answer is no. Like, Ginger, you and I are just normal people, right? And like, all this stuff is for us. And that's the cool thing. Like, I can't think, and I'm sure someone can dispel my my reasoning here, but I can't think of that many things we've talked about across 600 episodes of Chooseify that are very specific for like some elite other that like, oh, you have to fit into this tiny little box of super income or super intelligence or super whatever to get it. I wouldn't talk about that because it's not helpful. Like, who cares about that, right? And I think Travel Rewards is the perfect example. Like, if you pay it off on time and in full every month, I can't come up with a reason why you shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah. I love how it even extends to what the ultimate goal for many of us is here, which is, could I retire early? And that also seemed like something to me that was a different category of people, you know, and to enter into a community that says, oh, well, what if you're just a regular person? You could do this too. It's powerful.
It is powerful. And that's, I think, one of the best parts. Yeah, it's giving you permission to say, okay, I get what the drumbeat is. I get the drumbeat of negativity from the outside of, you could never do that. It's impossible. You can't retire. You're going to be eating cat food. It's, you know, all this other nonsense, like Social Security is not going to be there, blah, 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 blah. Healthcare is too expensive. Okay, that's fine. But what if you join this community of people throughout the world who are taking control of their lives? How good would that feel? And I think that is the selling point of financial independence. That's it in a nutshell. So yeah, that's my elevator pitch for FI, I guess.
End of show.
End of show. Yeah, we can stop there. Chooseify has had a good run. Go back and listen from the beginning. Oh, man. So, okay, let's quickly talk about actual Travel Rewards. So what was cool, we got an email here from Andrea who said, I hope you're doing well. As always, I'm loving the podcast. I just listened to the podcast with you and Ginger on travel, and that was nice to hear how you were both taking advantage of Travel Rewards points. It's always great to hear the specific examples that are different in using these airline rewards. There was another episode a few months ago where someone talked about using the Hyatt points for all-inclusive resorts, and it inspired me to take our family of three to Cancun to a Hyatt resort in June. We were so excited and especially excited because it was free. We took advantage of the companion pass for 3 years, and that saved us almost $5,000 in travel. So, I mean, that is super cool. And I will dispel another myth, if you don't mind, Ginger, is the companion pass, actually, it doesn't require $70,000 of spending or anything crazy like that. Like, and this is the Southwest companion pass for everybody listening. So this is kind of like the holy grail of travel rewards in that you basically get a free companion coming with you on your reward miles trips. I think actually on cash flights as well, for as long as you have this companion pass, which can be, if you time it properly, it goes through December 31st of the year after you got it. So you could theoretically get it in January and have that in effect for almost 24 months, which is super cool. And yeah, I mean, it requires usually opening like two credit cards, two different Southwest cards, but really that'll get you most of the way there.
This is going to be our mini series is Brad showing Ginger how she can get a companion pass.
Yes.
And I'll be speaking for all of the normal people who think it's not available to them.
Beautiful. Okay. So we'll take that offline and we'll come back next time we do it and we'll give an update so we won't get bogged down on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we had a great trip. Like I mentioned on our episode, I went down to Orlando with my daughter, Anna, for her marching band trip. And that was fantastic. We went to Universal Studios, which I have to say, I haven't been to Universal in 20 plus years since before they built the Harry Potter, the Wizarding World. And we were just blown away. I mean, it compares very favorably, if not better than Disney, which I never thought I'd say about any theme park in the entire world. It was just remarkable. So my daughter is a roller coaster enthusiast, and now Velocicoaster, which is there, is now her favorite ride in the world. So it had a little bit for me with Harry Potter. It had the amazing roller coaster for her. So that was cool. And actually, what was neat was after I mentioned it on our prior episode, one of our community members, a guy named Bob Sharp, who actually has like a really popular personal finance YouTube channel, which is super. He's got like 130,000 subscribers. It winds up he has a pretty significant position at Universal Studios. And he reached out to me. He's like, hey, I'd love to show you around a little bit. And we met up with him, hung out with him, just really great guy. And he gave us kind of a tour of the park, which is absolutely awesome. So yeah, that was super cool. And then my wife and other daughter met us down in the Bahamas, where we went to the Atlantis. Yeah, used Marriott points, got that completely for free, other than some of those pesky resort fees, which you would have had to pay with cash anyway, unfortunately. But Went for 5 nights.
How was it? How was the actual place? I remember you saying it was like an $800 a night. Was it so fancy and amazing?
You know, it's funny because it was fancy on the face of it in that it's a wonderful resort. Absolutely is. But it wasn't like ornate and like we felt out of place by any means. We certainly fit in, I would say, which maybe says a little too much about me than I care for. But no, jokes aside, it was just a really nice place. They have like a, I don't know, 50 to 100 acre water park there, which is wild. There was this like 2 mile rapids river / lazy river thing, a whole bunch of water slides and like 50,000 different fish and sharks and dolphins, which is wild. And it was really great. It was just like a nice, if you're looking for like a beach and or pool kind of relaxing vacation, it would be hard to do worse than the Atlantis, I would say. I think, you know, that said, just like any vacation, there's always things you learn. Like, would I go there on spring break? Yeah, probably not. It was a little too crowded. The lines for like food and things were a little too long. And like you're saying, on your luxury vacation, do you want to be spending time on lines and waiting? No, of course not. So, you know, but oh, poor me, right? Like I was in this beautiful place and I had to wait a little bit. But yeah, a lot of people in the FI community could definitely take advantage of that with Marriott points. So that was kind of cool. Like Andrea said in the email, Hyatt all-inclusives are a really great way to use your points. So I know Hyatt just bought like a couple brands of all-inclusive resorts. So you can use your Hyatt points at a lot more all-inclusive. So that's something I would look into next time. I think that's a good idea. And yeah, it was a good trip. And one last thing I wanted to highlight in this, Ginger, was kind of like the ancillary benefits of travel rewards. So 3 examples were, so we have TSA PreCheck. I guess we have global entry. We applied for global entry, which is a little bit annoying. You have to like go for an interview and get all these approvals and things. So it's a little bit annoying on the front side, but you get it for 5 years. And then we actually just had to renew it. And it was like a 5-second renewal. So a little bit of hassle on the front side. But then you get global entry and TSA PreCheck essentially forever. And that means it zips you through, TSA Pre zips you through the screening lines at, I think, every airport in America. And that saves you a ton of time. I know global entry, when we were leaving the Bahamas, they actually had U.S. customs in the Bahamas. There was like a 90-minute line for regular customs. And we just zipped. We went to the global entry kiosk and we were through in under a minute. So, I mean, just right there, that saved us 89 minutes. Yeah, I'm making it up, but essentially 89 minutes from just having that right there. It was the easiest thing in the world. So that was awesome.
How much is the global entry? Because then you're paying for it for 4 people too, right?
Yeah, it's $100 for 5 years. So it's basically $20 a year per person. So yeah, for $80 a year for our family of four, and considering we like to travel internationally, it seemed worth it for me. And there are some of the premium credit cards that give you the reimbursement for that. So there is some ways to say, you can just Google like global entry credit card benefit. Don't quote me on this, but I think Chase Sapphire Reserve, I know Capital One Venture X has it, and then some of like the Amex Platinums and things like that. So there are ways to get savings like that. That Capital One Venture X that I just opened got me priority pass lounge access, which was awesome. You talk about like feeling like the lap of luxury. We, on that way back from the Bahamas, we got to the airport fairly early and we zipped through that line. So we had extra time and we just hung out in the lounge and ate free food and, you know, had some complimentary beverages and such, and then did the same in the Charlotte airport. It was really cool. So that was another just free benefit of travel rewards that I didn't realize.
Yeah. Were you able to access that lounge because you had used the Capital One X to purchase those tickets, or just because you had that card?
Great question. When you have the card, you can get a priority pass, which is actually like a physical card. So you get a membership to Priority Pass. So with that membership, I physically have these cards, and we just walked up to the front desk and they said, we accept, you know, there's a little sign, we accept Priority Pass. You just hand it over and you waltz in for free. It would have been like $30 to $50 per person per lounge. So that was a nice little thing. For me, it's like, how can you make travel more pleasant? Mm-hmm. And I think that was a big, big way. And just one last thing on this. So this is not specific to credit cards, certainly, but if you're worried about like cash or getting cash in wherever you're going, and like you're still doing the old school, like, oh, I need to get money in the foreign currency before I leave, so I go to my bank, or I don't know, traveler's checks or whatever people used to do when I was growing up, you don't need that anymore. There's Charles Schwab has this investor checking account that is like the best unknown hack, like in travel. Well, it's not that unknown, but most people don't know it at this point. And you get an ATM card. So it's just a savings account, basically, or I guess it's a checking account. But I just throw a couple $100 in there. And basically, you can use your ATM card at any ATM in the world. And Charles Schwab actually reimburses you all the ATM fees, any fees. It's crazy as it sounds. Like, I used it in Greece at the Chautauqua a couple years back, and the fee was whatever in the local currency, and Schwab just rebated it to my account. So it makes ATM fees worldwide $0. So it's just like a super peace of mind type thing. And before you go on a trip, maybe you've funded with a couple $100 and then you have that money if need be. So that was just a really cool one. You can just Google, or we'll put in the show notes, but it's, yeah, just the Charles Schwab investor checking account is the one that I have. And yeah, for everybody who's interested in travel rewards, obviously we have a ton of resources at Choosify website. So choosify.com/travel, and that'll send you over to all of our info, all of the prior podcast episodes we've done on travel rewards. And as always, if you're looking to open up a credit card, choosify.com/cards, and that'll take you to our curated page of the top bonuses that we've found, including on some of my favorite cards like Sapphire Preferred and that Venture X now. So yeah, that's a great way to support us and obviously to really, most importantly, benefit in this win-win way from travel rewards, where you can save thousands of dollars a year.
So we've talked about your play. Let's talk about your work. And by work, I mean your bold move. I want to talk about how your bold move is going, if you're ready.
Yeah, let's do it. And I think this is what ties into your trans-theoretical model of change, right?
Yeah, I thought this might be interesting for people, because people in this community are interested in models of change and how is it that we actually make change. So the trans-theoretical model of change is a model that was developed in the 70s from looking at people who quit smoking and who did it successfully and who didn't. And really looking at that there were these actually different stages, and that people jump in, if you think of this sort of as a circle, people jump into the circle at different places. Okay, so what I find interesting about this model is that there are stages before we actually ever do anything. So the very first stage is pre-contemplation. And in pre-contemplation, we know there's a thing. We know there's potentially something is not ideal, but we're not ready to say, like, there's a problem, or there's a problem that's big enough that I need to address. So for instance, last time when we were talking, I was saying, oh, you're obsessed with Todoist, and I kind of want to be obsessed with Todoist, but, you know, I use iCalendar and it's basically fine. And so that's that pre-contemplation. It's also where you, when you're doing your pro cons, you really overestimate the cons and underestimate the pros, like how much it could potentially change your life. So sometimes people just stop. That's the end. I'm never going to do Todoist, the end, right? But some people will then move into contemplation. And contemplation is where you start to take the pro-con more seriously. And you start to bring more intention to the problem, even though you're not quite ready to do anything about it, right? There's an intention that you might start. So for me, this was in your newsletter a couple weeks ago, there was a comment from Anna who said, okay, I heard the episode and I got on Todoist. And I thought, okay, you know what? I'm just going to do it. Right? So I hadn't done it yet, but I made an intention. I thought the pros probably outweigh the cons of setting it up. I also, as I was doing that research, I saw that there was a free feature, which I didn't know about. So I thought, okay, you know, the pros are going to be worth it to me. So then third one, and then we'll stop there and talk about you. So third one is preparation. And so that's where you're making a plan. That's where I was looking up, like, oh, there's a free plan I can do. And it's maybe taking a small step, like putting your shoes out by the door before you go for a run. So those are all steps that are happen before you do the thing, before you actually start putting your stuff into the schedule or before you start running or whatever it is. So I was thinking, let's talk about your big move, which to be the healthiest version of you, is that?
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, I've said healthiest year ever, but yeah, it's in
healthiest
in essence,
year
yeah.
ever. Can you talk to us, like, knowing that framework now, like, can you remember being in pre-contemplation or contemplation? How did you get to that action stage?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the starting point was actually speaking with Dominic Quartuccio about bold moves. And that got me thinking, like, what would make this year great or special in some way? And I think that pre-contemplation was actually more stressful than I thought it would be, in the sense that I wanted to find something that was like good enough, like as silly as that sounds, like that would be important enough. Like, I know how I am. And like, sometimes I have, it's like best laid plans, or like I get excited about something and then I don't follow through. And I didn't want that to be the case. I think that was like a big concern of mine. So I was, okay, let's find something that would actually like really light me up enough to like follow through. I don't know if that fits in exactly, Ginger. Like, would that be pre-contemplation?
Yeah, that's that in between where you're saying, I'm starting to be more thoughtful about the pro cons. I'm starting to think it might be worth it. This might be the thing that would be worth putting energy into.
Yeah. And I think just kind of all wrapped up in, I mean, just like all of us, you know, I'm certainly not getting any younger. And, you know, getting to the point, and we've kind of beaten into the ground at this point, but the book Die with Zero, which I know has been important to a lot of people in our community, like it made me realize, okay, my lifespan and health span are both things that I need to be thinking about here in terms of how many decades can I stay healthy and fit and active. And you really need to work on that when you get into your 40s. I mean, just the sad reality is, if you're not working on it, then you're falling behind, because there's this sarcopenia where you lose muscle mass every year. And we know, I mean, just from looking around and seeing aging parents and other people that generation, like when you don't move, when you're not active, it goes away very quickly. And you really, really, really need to work at it. So I think all of these things have been kind of in my head. I mean, my parents have had some health issues recently. So maybe that's the contemplation stage, the taking it more seriously of, I really need to work on this. And this is not an oh cry for me scenario where I was in bad shape. Or, I mean, I was in perfectly fine shape, but what could I do? And I think the jury is still out, frankly, of like, that if it truly is the healthiest year ever, does that need to be more holistic than I'm currently making? We're about a quarter of the way through the year, you know, as we're recording this. Am I doing enough? And I think that might get into later steps. So I don't want to jump the gun here, Ginger.
No, but, no. What I'm gathering is that you spend a lot of time in contemplation.
Yes.
And then that's a place for a lot of people that they can get stuck. Yeah. So because your goal is so big and is so ambitious, it can be tricky to think, what am I going to do in my preparation step to prepare for a healthy, long life?
Right.
It sounds to me like you're more in preparation right now. It's like, what are those specific things that I'm going to do? Not just to be healthy, but to be healthier, to make this year different than the year before.
Right. I think that's the point. You hit on it exactly. I think by any objective measure, I'm healthy. But right, what can I do to make this year special? So while I think I'll always be stuck, just the way my brain works, some part of my brain will be stuck in that contemplation stage. I clearly have jumped into it. So I think I'm probably even past the preparation stage in a lot of senses, in a couple of ways. So I actually wound up, and I don't know if I mentioned this 6 weeks ago when we had our last roundup episode, but I wound up hiring an online fitness coach. So I have a personal trainer who I'm working with. Now, obviously, he's not in person. He's a couple hundred miles from me. But it really operates in this wonderful way where he's drawing up, I guess, my programming every week for the gym. And there's accountability for basically the nutrition that I'm taking in, the number of steps I'm taking every day, and the fitness program, my actual gym results. So three pretty important, like if I wanted to be honest and not hard on myself, like I always am, and just say like, just from those three things, could that be a healthiest year ever? If I'm better with my nutrition, better with my walking, and better with my workouts, okay, then that's probably pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, you did use better for each of those. So I think semantically, yeah, you have accomplished it. So you are in the action stage right now. You're moving forward towards your goal. You're taking steps every day. So then the next two steps are maintenance and relapse.
Okay.
So maintenance is just keeping that up. And the main goal really in maintenance is, how do I avoid relapse? And recognizing that people relapse, right?
Yeah,
and right. That you just jump back into the circle. But have you thought at all about, okay, if this doesn't go well, if I can look ahead to November and say, oh, this has actually not been my healthiest year, this has been worse than it's been in the last 5 years, what will have gone wrong if that's the thing we're talking about in November? And that's part of avoiding relapse, right?
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Okay. So for me, it would be that I somehow hurt myself, that I did something stupid and hurt myself. That is almost like any time that I have an issue with my fitness, it's because I overdid something and I wound up hurting myself for a couple of weeks and then falling out of a routine. So for me, I'm definitely very into routines. So like, for instance, yeah, I'm definitely in the action phase right now. No question about it. Like I'm now, I think, in week 13 of this. So it's basically since the beginning of the year, I've been going to the gym 4 times a week, absolutely rocking it, like seeing just unbelievable results, both in terms of physical appearance and more importantly, like the amount of strength and muscle that I've built. So it's been amazing. And like I said, this is not about aesthetics. This is about just living a better life, because I think pretty much every research that's come out now is just saying, as you get older, strength training becomes more important. Like we have to do this. You cannot, like you are just so susceptible to injury and issues and broken hips, which have just horrible morbidity rates. Like when people get in their 60s and 70s, like just from falling, you have an almost absurd percentage of literally dying in the next 12 months when you break your hip. I mean, it's like 30%+, which is crazy. So how do you get to the point when you're a couple decades prior to that to hopefully not have to worry about that? You build up your strength, you build up your mobility, you get up and down off the floor, you go out in nature and run and do all these things. Like you have to put the work in before, like way before.
I think you gave a really important answer to, okay, the thing that will have gone wrong is not just that I'm injured, but that I injured myself by working too hard or by not being careful about my technique. And so that's the part where doing that back look and say, okay, well, what can I do to make that less likely to happen?
Yes.
So Brad, you know, what's the answer to that? What will make it less likely that you will get injured?
Yeah, I think for me, and so far so good on this, right? So this program is like built around significant rest. It's built around like intensity, but controlled intensity on like the actual repetitions. And I think I genuinely love CrossFit. So I'm contrasting it with CrossFit now. But so I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with CrossFit. I think a lot of people do get hurt at CrossFit, and I have in the past, but I don't blame CrossFit for that. I blame myself, because it's just when you're not paying attention, when you are trying to rush through something, when you're trying to get a better time or like beat your old personal best, and you don't pay attention, your body can get in compromised positions. And when you're lifting weights or certainly heavy weights, you can really, really screw yourself up. And I've done that before where I'm just like, my back just hurts for 2 weeks because of one stupid repetition at the end of a 18-minute workout. It was just like so dumb. And I just did something stupid. And like, I know I'm being a little hard on myself, but like, so I think not doing that and doing this new programming, I think there's a greatly reduced risk of injuring myself, which like I'm super excited about. And like I said, I've been doing this for almost for 3+ months now, and I've never felt better. So I think there's a high probability come November, December that I will still be sticking with this. But I guess, right, the other question in this trans-theoretical model of change, so is, right, also forecasting, like what are other things? So I just came up with another one, which is, all right, the summer. Like I'm a very routine type person. And when the girls are in school, like I've been doing this for the last 3 months now, and my routine is fantastic. But what happens come whatever it is, June 1st, and the girls are out of school and they have their swimming practice and somebody has to drive them to practice for 8 and they have to come home at 9. But I'm actually meeting Jonathan at the gym 4 times a week at 8 a.m. Well, that whole schedule is going to change. Am I really going to stick with it? So I think that's maybe even the right answer or the better answer, Ginger. I think that has the potential to screw me up and get me off track.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about it again later, because you've identified your strength there, which is once I have a system, I'm able to follow the system. And so the challenge is going to be my system is going to have to change, but that you know your strength is having a schedule. And so, yeah, thinking about how to do that in a slightly more flexible way. I think this model is interesting too for health stuff, which is why I wanted to talk about it with your bold move. but it can be applied to any change that we're making. And same thing when you're talking about money and people who are saying, FI sounds interesting and I'm listening to these podcasts. And we always talk about, or you always mention, you have to take action in order to move forward. It can also be helpful maybe for people to think about contemplation is part of the change process. And so it's okay in whatever stage you're in, but to also really pay attention to, am I getting stuck in one of these stages? And what's stopping me from moving forward to the next stage?
Interesting. Right. Because that would then be applicable for any time you apply this model to anything. Yeah. Where did you learn about this originally?
Well, I don't think I've shared on the podcast that I'm a therapist. And so learning about change and how people change is just part of my training and part of what I do in my day job.
Oh, that's very cool, Ginger. Yeah. Well, certainly. Thank you for the professional expertise. That's very cool to obviously learn something new, right? And see how it's applicable really to, as you're talking about, the theory of change, right? And a lot of us are changing in many ways. I think just FI is a change for so many people, right? Hey, what are those things that maybe you're getting caught up on? So yeah, that was really very cool. And as you promised, it was quite interesting. All right. So we got a bunch of emails. I'm going to try to bomb through some of these and I suspect we'll have a bunch to talk about. Well, first, this is a quick heads up. If anybody's going to be in Omaha, Nebraska for the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting, the Choose a Buy Nebraska group is actually having a meetup. So yeah, it's May 6th, 4 to 6 p.m. at Black Beer and Table on 610 North 12th Street. So Eric, who's set that up, wanted me to mention on the podcast. So you obviously can also just join their local group and find out more information. So always like to talk about these big events. That's actually something really cool. I'm hoping to go to the Berkshire event next year, 2024, if all goes well. Okay. Sean wrote in. Sean said, my wife and I have been listening to your podcast for the last 6 months or so. Thank you for giving us language to have conversations with each other and our community around FI. It has been challenging and a rewarding process. One thing we are still struggling to understand is what number we need in order to, quote, retire and focus on other things. We're in our late 20s and plan to start having kids soon. We want to work part-time while raising our kids, then be financially free enough to work for fun the rest of our lives. Is there a calculation or a scenario generator that can help with thinking through our investments over time? Thank you. So, wow, that's a big one, Ginger, but I think we can tackle it, right?
I think so. There's so many unknowns in any question like this, but what I think is so cool about this question is that they've really spent some time thinking about what they want their lives to look like, and not just now, but in 10 years and 20 years and 30 years. So that's something that I think most people don't do. So kudos, good job. And then also recognize that the reason this question is so difficult is that that might change. What are your first thoughts for their question on how do you go forward?
Yeah, like you said, there is a lot of unknown, but there's a lot of unknown and uncertainty in life. So I think we do the best we can, and we understand that no plan, what's the Mike Tyson, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face, or no plan survives first contact with the enemy, right? Like there are all these sayings. And I think what they really mean is, okay, you can have a plan, but life is going to throw you curveballs every now and again. And things are going to change. You're going to have kids. They may be more expensive than you expect. They may be less expensive than you expect. You have no idea. Who knows where life is going to take you, if you're going to find a new career that starts making a boatload more money, or you find a new passion career that makes less money, right? So it's impossible in your late 20s. And by the way, congrats for getting started so soon. So you're way ahead of the game, Sean. And certainly, obviously, your wife, who I'm not sure her name, but I mean, just starting on the path to FI in your 20s, I have a strong suspicion you're going to be fine. But I think that all said, one of the beautiful parts about FI, and again, going back to my elevator pitch, is that we have some sense of what that number is. And I think what it really simply, the back of the envelope calculation is, you just take your annual expenses and you multiply by about 25, and maybe 25 to 30 if you want it to be certainly on the more conservative side. But that at least gives you some North Star to shoot for. So if your annual expenses are $40,000, then your FI number is $1 million. If your annual expenses are 80,000, then it's 2 million. Okay. Well, what do I have to do over the next 5, 10, 20, 25 years, whatever it may be, whatever your path is? And there's no right answer. There's no, hey, you have to reach FI in 12 and a half years or you're a failure. I mean, none of that nonsense, right? Like, it's whatever works for you and your family. And as those curveballs hit and as life hits and as things change and what you want out of life changes, okay, well, that can change also. And that's a really nice thing. But you at least have that North Star of, okay, my rough financial independence number is somewhere between 25 and 30 times my annual expenses. So I think, Ginger, at like a super high level, like that's almost like the answer to the question, but I know there's obviously additional nuance.
Yeah. That's the answer to all five questions. 25 times your expenses. I think there is something too, like we have to think about when he said we want to be part-time while we have kids, is the idea that part-time salary is going to pay for our current expenses, or that part-time salary is going to be supplemented by savings
right.
that we're accruing now? Or is that part-time salary going to be enough that we're also going to be able to save towards a more traditional retirement?
Yeah, that is a brilliant observation. And yeah, obviously, as you said, there's so much more that, of course, if we had Sean and his wife on the show, we could ask. But yeah, at a really high level, I think that kind of touches on, as you so astutely commented, like about the Coast FI concept. And I think that's what we would maybe work around with those different possibilities of, okay, Coast FI is when you get to the point where more or less you've saved enough, your net worth is significant enough that it's growing in the background and compounding in the background, just in the stock market or with rental real estate or whatever it may be, that, well, let's just say stock market to make it easier, that all you have to do on an annual basis is earn enough money to cover your expenses. So therefore, you don't have to have a savings rate. You don't have to keep adding to it. So, and then eventually you will coast on into FI, right? In that money that's working and compounding in the background is getting you there while you're concurrently just basically living paycheck to paycheck. And I say that in a kind of dripping with sarcasm way, because most people living paycheck to paycheck are struggling. Whereas you, in this case, working part-time, you're doing that on your own volition and very intentionally of, hey, I'm trying to build a lifestyle where in their case, they can work part-time and be there to raise their kids. And it's not all about that race to FI. I mean, Ginger, I think that's where a lot of people get bogged down, is it feels like it has to be this race. It almost becomes like a keeping up with the Joneses for our own community in a negative way, right? It's like, instead of normal keeping up with the Joneses of getting the Mercedes and the McMansions, our FI, the negative caricature of the FI people are, oh, I need a 67% savings rate, not a 65%, because that person in the FI community is only doing 65, right? Or I need to get to FI in 9 years instead of 12. It's like, that's so silly. It's not a race. You have to figure out what works for your life.
Yeah. And I think the reason they're struggling a little bit with this question is because they're not trying to do that path. So it's okay that we don't know all of this information, because even if the money that you're making right now, your intention is it for to go to your lifestyle once you have kids and you're working part-time, or your intention is we're putting it into a traditional IRA so that it will be available to us when we're 65. Either of those scenarios, your goal right now, what you need to be doing right now, is stockpiling a bunch of savings, getting your savings rate as high as you can. Do you agree, Brad?
I do. I mean, I think. Yeah, to your point, at the beginning, and without obsessing about it, right? So, and I think we both would say that, like, you're not trying to obsess, you're not trying to get to that point of deprivation. But yeah, if that is your goal, because I think that's probably the starting point for everybody, is what is your why of FI? And what are you trying to do here? It sounds like in their case, yeah, being at home to stay and raise their future kids. That's an important thing. So therefore, okay, there have to be actions taken, significant actions taken, and maybe even things you quote unquote give up, but it's in service of something larger. And I think that's the greater point here is, okay, what is my why? What am I doing? And what are the changes and potential sacrifices that I have to make to see that come to fruition? So, right, like in their case, you can't go wrong having that significant net worth to let that compound in the background, because it will just give you more options. I think that's probably what we would, the most succinct way is, it's giving you more options. And okay, maybe that part-time can be even less than you thought it might have to be. And you might find, of course, just like always, something that you're passionate about and you want to spend more time working on it. You can do that, of course. But like, to me, it's optionality. How can you build as much optionality into your life as possible and give yourself the most freedom and flexibility? I think, like, I know it sounds almost trite, Ginger, but like that is what having a significant net worth does. It gives you options. And I think, especially in their case, where they think there's a high probability that they're going to cut back on paid work. Yeah, I mean, having more net worth in your 20s and early 30s, it's going to help you.
I think too, it's a complicated question for them because they're not planning on stopping working, as far as I heard, like ever. And so that makes it a really different calculation. And I think embrace the complexity here. You're not going to have a simple back of the envelope, but to say, okay, early on, we need to have a higher savings rate. And then we can kind of readjust when we start to go to that part-time work.
Yep, agreed. Okay. I guess kind of moving on here, Sean, that thank you for sending that in. That was great. I actually, in that Phi Weekly a couple of weeks ago, I had a section on actually inexpensive college credits. And I wonder, Ginger, you might have some knowledge on this, especially as we live in different states and such. And my older daughter is in high school, and we actually met with her counselor recently to just kind of talk about course options. And I still struggle with this because, as I mentioned before, like I got caught up in like the elite admissions, you know, college admissions game back in the day when I was getting set to go to college. And you know, fortunately for me, I did rather well, and I got into some of these, you know, Ivy League and such type universities. But also on the optionality, like I don't want my own thoughts on the world to kind of like cloud my daughters in like a negative way potentially. And like I don't feel that type of elite university is necessarily the path, especially for people in the Phi community. But I want to preserve options for her, and I want to give, or for them, but my older daughter specifically now, and not preclude anything because I was short-sighted. I think that was the what precipitated us like having this meeting with the counselor. And you know, my daughter is a phenomenal student, like at the absolute top of her class, and she's going to have some options. But we wanted to have a sense of, okay, are there ways that maybe other people aren't thinking about? Like everybody's taking these AP courses in high school, in her school. And we actually, amongst this 30-minute conversation with the counselor, who was fantastic, like we actually teased out that there are some dual enrollment options at our local community college that my daughter could potentially take and would give her the same extra weighting, I guess, on her GPA as these AP courses that you would take just in the high school. But they would also give her a very high likelihood of getting college credit for these courses because they literally are college courses. They're at a community college. So the counselor said only a handful of students at this entire high school, which is like a top tier high school, are taking advantage of this dual enrollment. And really, I think it comes down to like people not knowing about it and people not asking about it. So it just kind of reminded me that we've had some amazing episodes. I know with the Millionaire Educator, we had episode 238, which was how to test out of college while you're still in high school, and episode 386, which we kind of jokingly called the $100,000 glorified sleepaway camp for college, which is obviously a little bit exaggerated. But those two episodes are just chock full of tips on really how to save on college. And actually, so we had a couple of these emails. So Ahmed wrote in saying, just to reemphasize the point below on dual enrollment, I did some courses when I was in high school, and it was a decision that paid dividends for a while. First, while I was in high school, I substituted AP classes I plan on taking with dual enrollment. And while I paid tuition, quote unquote, which was only about $300, it was cheaper than paying for the AP exam and all the study materials. That was my junior year. My senior year, dual enrollment became free in Ohio when they began paying for it. And he said, in addition to this, I found dual enrollment to be far less stressful as the work is spread evenly throughout the course, not just at the end with a massive, difficult AP exam. And I entered college as a sophomore by credit and had the opportunity to graduate early. But since I had great scholarships, I stayed 4 years and double majored. And this also worked out great as I studied accounting and graduated with more than enough credits to sit for the CPA exam immediately after my undergraduate program, which saved me the time and money from having to get a master's degree. So, I mean, goodness, it's crazy. He went on to finally say, all that to say, I highly recommend dual enrollment for a multitude of reasons for any high school student, especially over the other options of AP or IB classes. So yeah, that was some pretty cool flavor there. And then Whitney wrote in also in response to my newsletter saying, I just wanted to say I took advantage of this perk 20 years ago and went to a community college at age of 16. Back then, I didn't know anyone else doing it, and it was a bit intimidating, but it was well worth it. My professor even offered me a tutoring job for pre-calculus, so I was making money in between classes. And I transferred to the university as a sophomore, same as Ahmed, and overall savings were nice. I still got to graduate with my high school class, and I got the same high school and college diplomas as everyone else. It's definitely worth considering, and was actually a good stepping stone for me before going to a bigger campus. So yeah, just some cool flavor on, okay, are there different ways to do this? Are there ways to potentially get ahead? I know I've mentioned before that the state of Virginia has a guaranteed admissions program. So you can go to community college after high school graduation. And as long as you get a certain GPA, which I think is only like a 3-4, and you dot some I's, cross some T's, take exact courses, you get guaranteed admissions to the University of Virginia or William & Mary, which are two of the top 50 universities in the country. So I suspect a lot of states have things like that, if not exactly like that, then certainly things like that. So yeah, Ginger, I've talked for 5 minutes straight now, but has this ever crossed your plate in terms of thinking outside the box with college stuff?
Well, my child is 6, so it's not something I have thought a lot about, but I know in Washington State, we have something called Running Start, which is sort of similar to what, and I think other states have it as well, it's sort of similar to what you're talking about, where students can get college credit while they're still in high school, and that's a way for, you can actually get an entire AA for free, you know, if you meet this certain criteria, and so that's a cool option that we have.
That is very cool. Yeah. So I think the big takeaway here is these options exist, and your state, wherever you're listening to this to, your state might have different programs, but I suspect they exist. So do some research, ask around at the school, ask a counselor, and just think about these things. And then also really consider going back and listening to episodes 238 and 386 with the Millionaire Educator. So I think there's a lot of really, really good stuff in there. All right, Ginger, just two super quick things before we close out here. So first, you mentioned before that interest rates on savings accounts are actually going up for the first time. They're actually attractive for the first time in 20 years, I think, since I graduated college and saw like old school, like ING Direct having like 5% interest rates. The first time I've seen. So CIT Bank, which we've mentioned a bunch of times here, choosefi.com/CIT. They have their regular Savings Connect account, which at the time I'm talking about this, it's 4.5% interest. And then they have like a Platinum account, which is 4.75%. And I think you only need a $5,000 or more balance. So that should be pretty doable. So, I mean, that's really, really nice. I know Wealthfront has something very comparable. It's like 4.3% as I'm recording this. And they, not that hopefully most of us don't need the FDIC insurance beyond the $250,000 or $500,000. We probably don't have all that much money sitting in savings doing nothing. But they have this kind of neat thing where you're able to take advantage of FDIC insurance at, I think, like up to 8 banks at the same time. Like they do it in the background. So for the very, very, very tiny sliver of people that might benefit, that's just a cool little thing. And I know seeing some of these bank failures, like that Silicon Valley Bank, where people were worried about losing a significant amount of money that was over and beyond that FDIC insurance, having something like Wealthfront where they do it, I guess, just technologically, which is super cool. So you can get like $2 or $3 million worth of FDIC insurance. Again, I don't suspect that many people are in that position, but who knows? Maybe you have a small business or something and can take advantage of that. So yeah, the long and short of it is there are some ways now at this point to actually earn some money on, you know, we always get those questions. Hey, I'm going to buy a house. Where should I put this down payment money for the time being, for the next year or whatever? Like, and I've never had a really good answer for them. And I think maybe even just these simple savings accounts are the answer right now. I know they're definitely, we're getting pretty close to that 5%. And I suspect maybe short-term CDs might already be there at this point. So pretty cool. And finally, we got a cool win. So I love to close these out with a win from the community. So Tamara wrote in, I'm turning in my resignation tomorrow. I needed to say that to someone. This is a big deal. How awesome is that, right?
Yeah.
Go tomorrow. So this is a big deal, and it's something I've been wrestling with for far too long. The Choose a Vibe podcast has been a big part of helping me to ask and answer the questions that went into this decision. You see, it's a good, cushy job and well-paying with excellent benefits by most anyone's definition, yet it's so unfulfilling. I'm not quitting because I've reached FI necessarily. In fact, in proper FI terms, perhaps I'm exactly where I should be with a job that pays well and doesn't require all that much effort. Your shows, though, are about more than just the money. And that's the message that has drawn me into the community over the past few months. I've made multiple changes per episode, from travel rewards to VTSAX to cooking more and hiring someone else to paint. Along those lines, I've heard you and your guests talking about the value of living and making choices to live my best life. I'm not actually looking to retire early. I'm a single female working in tech, and I've had various starts and stops throughout my career. I've traveled lots and I've lived well, so my savings are okay, but not great. And I'm okay with that. I'm reconciled to that. Somehow I've reached my late 40s and I've been second guessing whether it's okay to reinvent myself yet again. Recent episodes have helped me to say, yes, absolutely it is. And I heard about a woman starting up a business and another moving to a career in tech, and I felt inspired. I'm in a different place in life, but I'm by no means done learning and living. Phew, I'm nervous and so excited about making this move. I have ideas about what I'll do next, but I'm going to give myself a breather to be more sure, and I'll be listening to you along the way.
Oh, incredible.
How cool is that?
I love that message. Do it, quit. Here's another counseling tip, which is that people who make the decision are happier than people who spend a lot of time going back and forth. Like once we, I guess, burn the bridge is the language that, you know, we hear a lot. But once we actually decide to marry that person, we decide to drop that job, people experience higher levels of satisfaction. And so how wonderful that you've made a plan and you're doing it.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. That's just amazing to see all the things that have come through from this podcast, and most importantly, from the community. And I'm turning in my resignation tomorrow. Can't beat that. So
yeah,
just congrats for taking control of your life. And yeah.
And she's opening up so much space, you know, for what could be. It's wonderful.
So many options, what it can be indeed. And I think that's for all of us, right? Like, what can life be? And I think it's a big, wide world out there. And like we've talked about throughout this episode, making these changes and giving yourself options, it just pays benefits for years and decades. And you never know how that's going to manifest itself, but just having that optionality is just, it's a marvelous thing. So huge, huge congrats. All right, Ginger. Well, I think that that brings our little roundup here to a close. Thank you, as always, for joining me. I know last time you mentioned that you have a website. So it's fiisfun.com, which is so great. I love that.
Head on over, everyone. Yeah, it's just a little site just about stuff, fun stuff that's going on in the community, and some little quizzes there to help increase your knowledge about some of that stuff. So hope to see you over there.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. All right. Well, thanks for joining me. We're obviously going to do this again sometime very soon. And to the community, thank you for being here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being part of the Choose a Vibe community and taking action. That's what makes a difference. So just keep on taking those little 1% actions every week, and you're going to have a radically transformed life. Thanks for being here. Thank you for listening to today's show and for being part of the Choosify community. If you haven't already, the best ways to get involved are, first, subscribe to the podcast. So you're listening to this on a podcast player, just hit subscribe. And then subscribe to my weekly newsletter. I actually sit down every Monday and write this by hand, and I send it out Tuesday morning. So just head over to choosify.com/subscribe. And it's really, really easy to get on the newsletter list right there. And I would greatly appreciate it. It's the best way to get in touch with me. You can actually just hit reply to any of those emails, and it comes directly to my inbox. So that's the way that I keep a pulse of the community and how we keep this the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. And finally, if you're looking to join an in-real-life community, we have Choosify local groups in 300-plus cities all around the world. So head to choosify.com/local, and you'll find a list of all of those cities in 20-plus countries all across the world. And if you're just getting started with FI, or you have a family member or a friend who you think would be interested, two easy ways. Choosify episode 100 is kind of our welcome to the FI community. And even though it's a couple years old at this point, it still stands up. And it's a really great just starting point to get an understanding of what is financial independence? What are we doing here? Why are we looking to live a more intentional life where we save money and use it as a springboard to live a better life? And then Choosify created a Financial Independence 101 course that's entirely free. Just head to choosify.com/FI101. And again, thanks for listening.